The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good day to you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the show. My name's Pete DeLonzo, and we are Behind the Lens. I got two guests that are standing by, but before I get them on the air, I just want to recap what happened last week with Tom Flores. He made some very, very pertinent viewpoints, I thought, that showed his character and some of the things that he went through, not only as a player, but as a assistant coach, the head coach, the general manager, winning Super Bowls, and being the first. And it hasn't really been brought up, but he was the first in the National Football League as a minority to be a quarterback, an assistant coach that won a Super Bowl, a head coach that won a Super Bowl, and also as a general manager. Those factors, I thought, were very, very important that I wanted to stress. And the facts remains of some of the trials and tribulations and transitions he went through, being cut from teams and things of that nature, which shows a lot that his character made him who he is today. Now, the two gentlemen I have on board will also relate not what being in their athleticism and what they have accomplished, but also what a freelancer does from the perspective of how they made it into the industry and how they stayed in the industry and all the frustrations that they went through. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you Doug Freeman and Jim Armitrout, two sports directors. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Good, Pete. Doing well.
That's Doug Freeman, ladies and gentlemen. Let's share a round of applause for that. And let me hear from you, Mr. Armitrout.
I'm doing well, Pete. How are you?
Good, baby. I'm glad to have you guys on board. I want to pretty much set it up where I'm going to talk to Doug first and find out his perspective of being a director. But before you were a director, you were driving the bus there at VTE Land. I want you to tell people how it was being an employee of VTE, eventually being a freelancer, and going from the TD position to camera and finding that big chair as a director in Los Angeles. I want you to tell the listeners how it all started in a short synopsis, if you could, Doug. You got the floor. Go ahead.
Well, you know what, Pete? I was after college. I was looking for something to do, and television sports sounded really good, and I got lucky. You know, I got started with VT, loading the trucks, driving the trucks, and then I became a cameraman, and I thought that was as good as it could get. You know, being at sporting events and being paid to watch sports. And I became staff with VT because freelance kind of worried me, and I was worked my way up, and I was staff, and they made me a TD. And I would TD local sports and, you know, all the teams that would come in. And at the time, VT was doing all the local sports in Los Angeles. And I TD'd and would sit next to directors, and I learned how to direct. And I said to myself, I can do this. These guys coming in aren't that good. So I think I can do this. And the timing was right. There I was, you know, cable TV started up. The need for people grew. There was much more sports being televised in the early 80s. And there I was in position, and I got a chance to direct and stayed with it. And I've stayed in sports ever since. And I've been really lucky. And a big part of it was, of course, the timing. With like, as I said, cable TV starting, and the need was just, you know, there was just so much more being done, and they needed people. And there I was. So I was really fortunate. But I worked hard, and I sacrificed, and as you said, drove the trucks and unloaded the trucks and loaded the trucks. But I've always loved doing sports, and I just stayed with it.
Sweet. Well, you know, Doug, it was quite a transition. I've known you, we're pushing close to 30 years, my God. So it's something that I want the listeners to know about. The sacrifices you made as a freelancer when you kind of like drifted away from the VTE world and you kind of like went into it with both feet as a director, you knew you were taking a chance. And ladies and gentlemen, the thing that I want to stress is that these two gentlemen, Trout and Doug, they know the experiences of what a freelancer goes through and how they had to attain a certain confidence level of staying into the business, because you could be gone in a drop of a hat. Now, Doug, I want to throw the ball in your court and understanding, what did Doug Freeman do to make those adjustments?
Well, I think the one thing that what I was always afraid of is that every time the phone rang and you got a call to work, I was afraid to say no, thinking that if I said no, they wouldn't call back. So you may have plans or a vacation planned or something with your family, and you get that call, and you cancel what you have and you go to work. And I was always afraid that if I said no, they wouldn't call again. And whether or not, that was just one of the sacrifices you had to make. And I did it. Sometimes I question it, but obviously now I'm glad, for what I did. I've had a great career. I still have a great career, I think. And but there was a lot of sacrifice.
How's your definition of what a freelancer is, and in the past, as opposed to what it is today? You tell me.
Well,
Trout's listening as well. He's going to have his turn to talk about it as well. Go ahead.
I think that, if you're freelance, you don't have a job. You work for anyone that calls. You will do whatever it takes, but there's no guarantees that you're going to work. And, that takes, it takes a lot to build up to where you're going to get calls and you're going to be called back and you're going to work, but there's no guarantees.
All right. But the talent base that you have seen nationally speaking as a director, the talent base of seeing these freelancers, they're proving themselves every show, because I guess our motto, or our mantra, I should say, is you're only as good as your last remote. But these guys and women are very, very talented. Yes or no?
Without a doubt. And I'll give an example. As my local crew here in Los Angeles, and I know, and Trout may say the same thing, and I know a lot of directors do, everybody thinks they have the best crew in the country. Well, I have guys working for me that have been with me, almost 30 years. The same crew. There's quite a few of them, and I think they are the best in the country. These guys have never lacked for work. They do Super Bowls, they do the World Series, they do the NBA Finals, they do all the big shows. They're the best in the country, and I get those guys on my local shows, and I'm lucky that I work for people that, get me the best crews, because they are more expensive. They cause, they charge more, and they should. They're paid more. But I have a loyal crew that has stuck with me, like I said, for almost 30 years, some of them. And they're not worried about, I mean, they might be worried about it, but they work every show.
Fine. I respect that. I respect where you're coming from, Doug, because, you know, every market has their own perspective, and you see that when you're in that, because they have that certain swagger about them, and I understand that, and Trout understands that, and I see it from the type of production teams that come here in the Bay Area as well. But when it leads to the method of coverage that you see creatively speaking, talk about Doug Freeman's style and savviness of what you think is the Doug Freeman style. Go ahead. Tell me what your feelings are on that.
I think what we try to do is cover the game. And it sounds simple, but whatever stories are going on, we follow the announcers. They lead any telecast. So what they're talking about, they're talking about, you know, whatever's going on in the game, and we follow them. Whatever the stories are, whatever the, you know, if the player having a big game, a bad game, whatever that is. And basically, I've always believed, and I learned this early on, the only thing the viewers care about and the fans care about is seeing the game. We do a lot of other things in production that jazz it up, make it look good, but the only thing that matters is covering the game. So we don't miss action, and we stay and we follow the stories. And it's simple.
But it's not simple, though, Doug, because it's been saturated with useless information, too much promos, too much tweeting, too much drop downs. Come on, Doug. I mean, you remember what it was 30 years ago.
There's no doubt that our shows are full of that. But the reality of the business is that there's a lot of sales. Sales pay for everything, and they pay us.
I understand that. I understand. How much is enough, though? I mean, you're at the dinner table, and I talked to Mark Gubazov the same way. You're at the dinner table. Mark Gubazov is telling you about his experiences of being a pitcher in the major leagues. I interrupt Mark Gubazov at the dinner table, and you're listening to Mark Gubazov, but I'm going to interrupt. Would you or would you not be provoked by Mr. DeLonzo interrupting Mark Gubazov's conversation?
Yes, we would. And
okay.
That's the part of our goal is keep that all those intrusions from interrupting the coverage of the game. We try to make it as least intrusive as we can. Now, sometimes we don't, and people do it. All directors and producers do it differently, but I know that I try to do all this stuff so it doesn't affect the coverage. But the fact is that all this stuff is a reality. That, you know, we have to get all these promos in. We have to get all these sold things in. And believe me, every show I do, I'm complaining about how much there is. But the bosses and the management doesn't want to hear it. And I kind of, you know, I understand the financial side of it. They have to sell. If the people who are selling this stuff don't stop, they're going to get it, sell as much as they can, because that's where the money is.
Okay, fine. I can understand that, because I don't see what they pay out with their overhead and their payrolls. I fully understand that. But I just look at from a cable subscriber that I remember the ESPN days where it was pretty much commercial free. And I love that. I mean, it was kind of like what I felt was that was just cable. That's what I'm paying for. It's just almost like watching free TV, you know, commercial free TV. And I just feel like cable TV has gone through this transition where it's removed that type of vision that I would really look forward to. It has changed. It's saturated. It's very vanilla.
Pete, they're gone, and I'll give you. How about an example? How about your salary? Has it gone up a little bit since?
Oh, look at the cost of living.
Those days.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your rates have gone up, so something has to pay for that. And I don't even look at it like cable anymore, because everybody who's watching has a remote control in their hand, and they're pushing a button. So I don't think it matters if they're pushing a button for ABC or for ESPN or Fox Sports West or Comcast. I don't think it matters. It's just another button on your remote. So, and that was kind of proven with Monday Night Football. It's not on ABC anymore. It's on ESPN. So I think that that you don't, you can't distinguish as much between that.
Okay. So this is something I want you to look in a perspective, like thinking outside the box. I want to give that, is that a question? It's a consumer. And I look at, in our industry is one thing, but it's just like when you purchase a service or you purchase a product, Doug, and it's just like, it's not the same. I bought the automobile. It's not the same as it was 5 years ago. It's just like they changed the style or this or that. You know what I'm talking about, Doug. And, you know, it's just like you're paying more for less. That's my whole perspective that I'm seeing in the industry from my view. And I think it could be made better. I really do. I just think that there's something going on in the industry where everybody copies off each other. And I don't know. You tell me. Go ahead. What are your views on that?
I'm not sure. I don't know how to respond to that. I like to think that things change. I kind of learned this early on. You have to be able to adjust. You have to be adaptable. And that's what you know. That's the reality now. That things are, you know, it's all changing. So what was, you know, the way things were 5-10 years ago, it's all different. Our business of sports television is changing. How we produce it, how we cover it, and how it's distributed is changing. And, you know, what we see now in 10 years could be completely different. And how it's gotten to us. And I think you have to be, you know, we look at the changes you've seen in equipment. We've all seen them in equipment, in the amount of equipment, in coverage.
The cost of equipment. Yes, I understand that. Yes,
everything's changed.
Yeah,
but you got to be a little flexible.
Well, I look at flexibility as a two-way street when it comes down to, you know, we're giving the public viewer something to really grasp onto, and I just wish that, you know, some of the things that I remembered in the past, and I can't bring back the past, and you know that, and it was fun back in the past, but things have changed, ideas have changed, and the philosophy has changed, and the coverage has changed, and the way they speak over the air has changed, and the political correctness has changed.
That's true. That's all true. Some of that for the better. Don't you think the coverage is better now than it was?
Oh, it's absolutely. No doubt in my mind. I think it's superb. I think it's superb. There's no doubt in my mind about
that. The equipment's better. Don't you think the fans are getting better views of the game, better replays, better equipment,
right?
A better picture? So, I mean, a lot of it's for the good. When we started, we were doing baseball with four cameras.
Right.
Now we've got 10.
Right. Okay, Dougie, look, we got to take a break. I'll be right back. I'm going to bring in Jim Armitrout in our second segment. You don't go away, Doug. You're going to come into my third segment. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Behind the Lens with Pete DeLonge. We'll be right back right after this distinction break.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
It's time to let the ladies do some sports talking around here. The sports girls take over the Voice America Sports Channel every Monday for The Inside Score. Beth Silverberg, Chin-Chin Ong, and Stacey DeBerry are here to showcase the athletes, the coaches, and the foundations that change lives. In addition, we'll have a ton of regular features and a featured guest sports girl every week. You'll hear the stories you need to hear from the people that make the difference. The Inside Score is heard every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern or Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
I don't care where they put him. Hicklin is out of here.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything. Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
All right, gentlemen. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And, that was good talking to Doug Freeman for this first segment. Now I'm going to bring in Mr. Armitrout. Jim, I want to know about your definition of how you came into the industry. And I remember you and I were hand in hand in the trenches in 1985. And, God, we started Giants Vision together. We did... So much from you, from being a TD to being tape producer to producing to directing. I mean, come on. Trout, tell me about that stage of your life coming into the Bay Area from Seattle, Washington, and coming mixing with all these insane individual freelancers in San Francisco.
Well, I took a really different – well, not really different, but an origination different path than Doug did. In that we were the same in that we were both really lucky for the timing and the people we met and the people who gave us opportunities. But mine was kind of an accident. I was working for an electronics company in Seattle, and I had to go to California to work on some of their product, and there was a TV production involved, and I met you and Tommy Adza and a bunch of people, Drew Kelsey, a bunch of guys who... I didn't know what they did. I didn't know what their world was like, but I kind of got integrated in it by the electronics side. And I was only 23, so I really thought it was cool. And they dragged me out to Oakland and to Candlestick and said, this is what we do. And I didn't really have any reason to stay in Seattle, so I basically went home and said, I'm moving to California and going into TV, because it was, like Doug said, it was a chance to be around sports and watch the games and be part of that action as a young person that, you know, I was always a sports fan, so it was great. And I had a chance to do that. Started at the first game I ever did, I was holding the parab on the microphone on the sidelines of Stanford for a Washington State game. It was going back to Seattle on one of the really early Prime Sports Northwest kind of cable companies that Dougie mentioned, too, that were starting up all over the place. So those opportunities, meeting Jim Lynch, who was the crew chief at the time, who kind of brought that group together, getting opportunities to work early on. In fact, you mentioned Tom Flores earlier. One of my, not earliest, but one of the jobs I did not long after the football game at Stanford was the Super Bowl at Stanford, 49ers in Miami, and I was wiring TV booths, and one of them was for Tom Flores to do announcing back to England. So I sat in the booth and listened to what he did, and just really interesting stuff that I fell in love with and met people and got more opportunities as they came. And like Doug also said, you jumped on them because that was the thing that you had the opportunity to do, and we loved what we were doing, and we still do. And so not only were we afraid to say no, there was no thought of saying no at that time, at least for me, at the age I was and single and moving from a different city and really having no reason not to just want to go work everything that possibly came up.
Right. It was exciting. There's no doubt about it. I mean, me coming out of news at a KGO, and I was working part-time as a freelancer. I wasn't really in with both feet at the time when Giants Vision really got off the air, but got on the air, I should say. But but the group itself, and you remember like it was yesterday. I don't know if you remember that far back, but I'm pretty sure you can. But we are getting old, and
I don't even remember. Were we together yesterday? I can't remember. Were we together? Yes.
I'm not sure we were together, but we both skied the same mountain. So I'm not going to say we were together at times. But, yeah, we had fun yesterday. I'm glad we came to Colorado to work the Bronco game, and we got a chance to go up to Winter Park and enjoy some beautiful blue sky day activity with some new snow that really hasn't, you know, filled in yet, but still a great early season day. So, yeah, it was fun. And that's kind of, when you look back like you're talking about, it's hard to remember everything because it was a long time ago and there were side distractions that were going on. But when you talk about the group and that crew, I mean, it was a group that was pretty much thrown together, that just kind of everybody was in there for the same reasons. I think first off, I want to say, to echo something that Doug said, as I've been in this industry a while, and I tend to travel a lot. I haven't been as fortunate as some have to stay in the same market, some of it by choice, some of it not, but I've been around a lot of different markets and done a lot of games with a lot of different crews, and the concept of which crew is the best is hard to define because there's a lot of really good people out there doing what we do. I will say, I'm going to do a game in L.A. later this month, which is with a home crew, which is one of the first ones I've done in a while. I usually go in as a visitor, and I saw the crew list, and it's unbelievable. They have, like Doug said, they have an entire tape room, an entire camera crew of local people doing a local show who could very easily, all of them, be off doing network-level Super Bowl stuff at the highest possible level, and they're all working at home in L.A. because that's what they choose to do, which is great. Our crew in the Bay Area came together, and we were all kind of young, and we were all into the same thing, and Vaughn Kilgore, Greg Overton, people like that who were doing these jobs before I got a chance to do them, basically said, here's how this works, go play with it, and same for you. Here's a camera position we've never used before, as the cameras went from 4 to 5 to 6 or whatever as the games got bigger. And we just sort of made it up as we went along, and now a lot of those camera positions and a lot of those replay angles and things like that are fairly standard as the shows get bigger. And then a lot of it came from, and I know it was the same thing as happening in LA because I went down there to do games as a crew person and watched how they were doing it. And it all just sort of developed by people working together and having ideas and being creative and coming up with things and trying stuff and saying it didn't work and then trying something new and finding one that did and sticking with it.
Do you, find that your style is, it's not a question unique, it's just like you feel comfortable with it, but there's certain play into what you feel comfortable with is taken away from Jim Armentrout?
I'm not really sure that I have a style.
You have a style though, Trout, like, you know that. I mean, everybody knows that.
You see it from the outside. I'm not sure I know what I'm just me from the inside, right? So I learned, as Doug did, I TD'd after I had done some other technical things. The TD spot, pushing buttons next to the director, was kind of the natural evolution for me because I was technical, and you kind of oversee the crew and kind of help solve technical problems if they come up. That position kind of does that, or it used to, and it still does if it's done well. So I sat next to a lot of different people, and I took the same kind of things Dougie did. There were guys who came to town and girls who you just go, if I ever get a chance to sit in that chair, I'm not going to act like that. And there were other people, Tom Smith from TBS in Atlanta, one of the people I looked up to greatly. When a person made a mistake, Tom didn't shred them. He didn't crush them to a point where they're in a box thinking, I'm not going to work hard because I might make another mistake. If someone made a mistake, he almost would make sure they knew it was okay that, it wasn't okay to make a mistake, but it was okay that they were trying to work really hard, and it made you want to work harder. And that kind of thing just impressed me that, you know, the old school of screaming and yelling, it was kind of how a lot of what we do developed, but it didn't have to be that way. And so I've kind of tried to take the approach that I know that there's there's very few people that do what we do that are out there trying to screw up a show. Right. Most of us came up with the concept that this is awesome and we really want to do this and it's great. And so let's go do a kick-ass TV show. So as long as people are working hard and trying, and if they make a mistake, they fix it, they don't do it again, that kind of thing. It should be a collaborative environment where everybody's trying to do the best they can all the time.
Good. But, Trout, let the viewer or let the viewer know what they want to watch is one thing, but I want you to let the listener hear from you how creative the people are in the tape room, how creative they are in video, how creative they are in audio, in graphics, and, oh, yeah, by the way, the camera crew is out. How fast it comes to your monitor wall. I mean, you tell the listener as from that perspective, and you've been sitting in that chair for a long time now, from both the director's perspective and the producer's perspective. You tell the listener how fast that shot is developed and created in your vision that you see it off the monitor wall as opposed to a preview monitor and going to program.
Well, it's live sports, right? I mean, it's the one thing you can't TiVo. It's the one thing you can't. You still have to be there for it. That's our job, is to be there for it. You can't say, well, we're just going to take a break and come back after this. Oh, we missed the winning hit in the World Series field goal or something like that in a college football game. That's not what you're supposed to do. So you're supposed to be in that. You're supposed to be tuned into what's going on. You're supposed to be aware of what people are doing. In theory, it's all been talked about before, right? I mean, I know Dougie does football at the highest possible level, and his camera meetings are legendary. I mean, they plan for everything. They sit and talk about, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? I can't really get that angle, so this camera's going to make sure to have that, and I'm going to make sure we see it there. So it's been talked about. It's been planned. It's been discussed, and then, you know, a lot of times it doesn't happen. So you think, well, okay, that didn't work the way we wanted it to, or we didn't get what we wanted from the game, but we covered what we had well. And then the next time or five times later, that thing happens, and because it had been discussed, the camera operator's there, the tape operator's there, the graphics people are ready, the producer knows that the story is what he wants to tell, and the director feels free to just go for it, move the show in that direction if that's what you need to do. The announcers are on the same page because they've been in all these meetings. It's really collaborative, and when it's working as well as I like to think it can, it's awesome because it's like music. It's like being a musician. If anybody's done that before, you're taking cues off other musicians. You're moving it in a certain direction because that's where the song's going. It's like playing a team sport. You played hockey at a pretty high level at college. You know when a guy's taking a breakout. You know where you're going to go, and if it works out the way you want it to, then it's great.
Do you see from I notice how certain dispositions and personalities are involved for who you need to have in the replay mode and who you could trust and who you don't know. Do you have to have that mindset change in every market that you go into?
It was interesting. A long time ago, I interviewed for a management job and I didn't get it. And it's probably for the best, but the interviewer asked me a question. He said, why should I hire you for this job? You don't have any management experience. And they said, I kind of think I do, because what we do is we go into a truck, which may contain 50% or more of the people that we've never met before. We don't know them. We don't know what they're like. We don't know if they need to get, you know, an ass kicked in a little bit, or if they need to get cajoled a little bit, or if they need to get talked up, or how they respond to something. And we have a deadline that's to the second. You know, you can't walk in a truck and say, you know, we're going to meet our sales deadline by a month. We're going to meet our deadline by 5 minutes. You know, we're on the air at 7:00 or 7:00:30 or whatever it is. Uh-huh. So it's our job as producers and directors to try to make, you know, it's everybody's job to make sure it happens, but it's our job to make sure that we figure out how to make all the people work together. Some people are in a bad mood, and some people are bringing a different baggage to the site. Uh-huh. And it's kind of our jobs to try to figure out how to get it there. And that's management, I think.
Right.
It's fun management because it's in a truck and it's live and it's like we're watching sports for a living. My wife always teases me when I come home and say, man, I kind of had a bad day. She said, if you didn't go do that game you did, you'd be watching it on TV at home not getting paid. So please don't complain, because you're getting paid to do what you love and watch sports on TV, which is what you'd be doing anyway.
Yeah.
She's right. It's true.
Yeah, but I see from that perspective, and I see from the camera angles perspective and
what camera individuals have to deal with, and it's hard to relay that to production, and production hears about it, but I don't have time to talk about it because stadium operations won't help us in some of the things that are unmanageable at that time. It could be during the game. It could be before the game. They don't respond on certain problems that we have at these positions, and they don't, and they procrastinate on it. And it's just some of the things that I want to share, not only with you guys, but it's kind of like sharing to the listener that we deal with issues, camera personnel, that should be resolved because it's going to make the show smoother. It's going to make it safer. It's going to have all these other issues that the internationals should know about, the union should know about, that the GM and the executive producer should know about. We have representation. They procrastinate on certain things. And it's kind of like we go through certain frustrations, but it's kind of like it's kind of like they procrastinate on it, Trout. And I
If you fall down the stairs of the stadium, not that you would, and didn't tell anybody about it and hurt yourself, not that you would do something like that. Don't you think that somebody should make sure that they know those stairs are slippery? Not that you would ever do that. But you
no,
know what I'm
not
saying?
At all. No. We were talking about that yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, I fell twice at the Coliseum at a Thursday night.
And you didn't tell anybody about it because you're too proud and you want to make sure your job gets done. So you didn't go tell him about it. Now, if you don't tell him about it, how do you expect him to fix the stairs, Petey?
Well, I did talk. After about a week, I felt like my knee didn't really – the swelling hasn't really healed properly. So it's kind of like I think I should notify some people about it. CBS knows about it, and the IBEW down in L.A. knows about it. So
now the whole world knows about it, Pete.
What's that?
The world's listening right now, so the whole world knows about it.
How I did it? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying now the whole world knows about it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, you know, that's how it works, Trout. You know, it's like it's always after the fact. Like, I don't know, all these accusations on what happened 20 years ago. And why did you tell me back 20 years? Well, I didn't think it was right at the time. And I just want to let you know this happened to me. Oh, okay. So, you know, statute of limitations, it's gone, whatever. But let's forget about that, Trout. We're getting off on a tangent here. I want to know about Jim Armentrout. We got about 2 minutes here. I want you to your methods of coverage. I want to know the Jim Armentrout style. I really do.
Let's not miss anything. Let's talk about everything possible that might come up, and there's no way we're going to get close to talking about everything possible. So let's just talk sports. Let's talk about the teams. Let's get as much knowledge as we can going in. And then let's turn everybody loose to do the best job they can and cover it. I got a really good lesson in how not to pigeonhole yourself or another operator when you're doing a game from, I think it was one of Mr. Freeman's early directing shows at Stanford in a basketball game. Remember when we had used to run the cable through the windows?
Yeah.
On the side of the Maples Pavilion.
Sure.
I think it was me and John Ward in tape, and Doug was directing, I think, one of his earlier shows. It was probably mid-'80s. I don't know. And
Raycom Sports.
It probably was. We tried to steer Dougie in a certain direction replay-wise, and he didn't want to go there, and he let us know that he didn't want to go there. And then at halftime, he said, this is what I'm trying to do, and we were not smart enough to see it at the time that we were kind of take it not the way we wanted to go, but once he told us how we were doing it wrong, it was a lesson that stuck with me to this day. It's like you might think you have the answer to what the show should do, but if there's a plan that the people who are running the show have, it's probably better and more involved than what you're thinking right at that moment. And
beautiful.
That was a good learning experience. So,
that was okay. Okay, Trout, we got to take a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Behind the Lens with Pete DeLonzo. We'll be right back right after this station break.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Are you a real sports fan? Get ready to talk football and anything else sports with Kwame Lassiter. formerly with the Arizona Cardinals, San Diego Chargers, and St. Louis Rams. Kwame's got the experience, so he's prepared to talk sports with you every week on Kwame Lasseter's Sports Talk. It's on the Voice America Sports Network every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time. Get ready for an unpredictable, fun, and sometimes sarcastic look at the world of sports. That's Kwame Lasseter's Sports Talk on the Voice America Sports Network.
Check your feelings at the door and enter the man cave. Don't let the name fool you, because we're here for anybody that wants to talk and listen in. Hosts J.D. Harris and Ray Austin are here to lead the forum from the fans, former players, owners, execs, and coaches. While inside the man cave, you do whatever you like. We won't judge. We'll even go beyond sports to talk technology, current events, and entertainment. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need to bench his ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. I still have the gentlemen still on board with their experiences and working into the wonderful world of sports television. But these gentlemen are directors for many, many years. And it kind of brings a nice, warm feeling in my heart and soul to kind of reflect on what we did in the past. And Doug Freeman, you remember the trials and tribulations of you working with us here in the Bay Area, especially with Trout. And it's just like some of the things that you can reflect on, and maybe you can remember something that you want to share
with
Trout and I and the listeners.
All those years of traveling up and down the West Coast doing every sport, I always loved going to the Bay Area. I thought the crew was a great crew. Hardworking, they were good at what they do. They were fun, and we always had a lot of fun up there. And part of it was because they were, you know, I was out of my comfort zone with my home crew, but it was a great crew, and you have a system up there that trains good people, and you got good people coming through, so it was always a pleasure to be up there.
That's sweet. Trout, what do you think? I mean, your reflections and that kind of things that you remember we can never take it away from them. Go ahead. You tell me. What are some of the grand feelings of Jim Armitrout in television?
I remember one day driving to a car race down at Laguna Seca with Vaughn, and Vaughn was running low third at the time at Candlestick, and I was producing the tape room for Giant Decision or whatever it was back in those days. And we talked about Vaughn had seen something out of his lens that he thought, if this ever happened, if there was a guy on first and the ball was hit to right and the throw went this way and the pitcher covered that way, he said, I'm pretty sure I could see all of it in my lens without being, you know, overly distracting or swish pans or anything like that. I think it would all just sort of appear in my frame. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I hope that happens someday. And I never forget the night it happened. And we used to be pretty frenetic with our replay sequences. We'd go to lots of different machines just because we could, and we were trying to learn as much as we could and show off what we could do as individuals in the tape room and all that. And it all just happened on Vaughn's camera. And so I remember telling Jim, you just go to this machine and just watch. And we all did, and it got kind of quiet. It was like, wow, that was really cool, and it was educational for us in that you didn't have to play it the way we were playing it, which was that everything had to be at full on all the time. You could look at things through one lens and see it differently, but see the same. And that was a big educational step. And I think part of that I don't think it would have happened at all if we hadn't had that conversation in the car. And I remember the big thing about that group at that time was everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people did things together, played golf, goofed off, carpooled to events, and we talked about what we did. And we talked about experimenting. We talked about trying different things. And they didn't very often pay off, but the ones that did, we still use today. I still flash back on them when I think I need to go to a different angle right now. It's like, you know what? Maybe you don't. Maybe you just need to let it unfold from where you are, and let's see if it'll come true. And it does, more than you'd think, which is nice.
Do you think the camaraderie from, say, from Southern California, Doug, you see that type of cohesiveness, or is it kind of like dissipated over the years?
No, I think it has dissipated over the years, but still the core crew, I think, is still very much together. And, you know, Jim mentioned that he's coming into L.A. to do a game, and he looked at that crew, and he's astounded at who those people are. And that's why I'm so fortunate, because that is my home crew. Almost every game I do are those people, whether it's Clippers now or Angels. Those are the people I get to work with. And that's why I think I'm so fortunate. And we still do have that camaraderie. It's as everybody gets older and there's other distractions, family, kids, whatever, grandkids, it has lessened, but it's still there. And it certainly has changed since we were younger, but it's still there in, you know, in a different form.
No, that's true. Trout, you've made so many different location moves, you and Pep and the girls and stuff. I mean, how was that for you? I mean, tell Dougie your feelings on going to Phoenix and then Phoenix to Golden. I mean, come on. That's tough, right?
Well, then it was just life. Hey, Jim, I mean, it was life at the time.
It was a job, right? Is that right?
Yeah, that's it. That's what it did. I saw the end coming. Like, time to go. you might ask the San Mateo Police Department. No, I'm just kidding. It was just life. It was like, I've always been a bit of a, I don't know, restless spirit or whatever you want to call it. And I envy Doug a lot and other guys and girls in this business who have stayed in one place and been successful and loved where they were and made a home there and all that. And it just wasn't the thing for me. I left Seattle, I went to San Francisco, I was there for 16 years. The kids came, we wanted our life to be a little different. My wife had family in Phoenix. There was a job opening with a person, Mike Connolly, who was the executive producer, who's been one of my great career influencers. I mean, he's been helpful at every step and a great friend. And so I went there and produced Coyotes Hockey for a few years, moved over to the director's chair, was there for 9 years, got a chance to come to Denver. Again, my wife's from Nebraska originally, so that was a move that put her closer to her family, which was great and a great place for our kids to grow up. So, and working with Ken Miller and working with the Rockies has been a great summer gig, giving me a chance to meet some people and do some things outside of work that have been fun. So it's just been life. It's how, it takes you everybody different directions. I mean, you mentioned earlier you wish that TV was still like it was back when you were watching it when Espen was commercial free, but I read a news release this morning that said there's going to be a 4K truck on the road in sport dedicated to sports by next year. But would you rather have four cameras or 40 cameras with 4K? I mean, to watch it on TV, going back to what it was is a great, noble wish and all, but I don't want to go back to four cameras for all those reasons.
No, I don't look at it in that perspective. I look at it more in the simplicity of the game and how it develops without all the interruptions. I mean, I love HD, Trout. There's no doubt in my mind. And going to 4K, which I've seen it bits and pieces. I've seen it on the big board there at Levi Stadium. Yeah. But I think that I would love for it to just cut the distractions out more and kind of like let it breathe and let me just watch the game. So, Dougie, what do you? I mean, you know about that as well. I mean, do you see it from what Trout's saying?
That Jim said.
Yeah,
he talked about moving around. What happens in this business, especially in the production level, is you get hired and you do a team, or you work for somebody, and the management changes so often. And what happens is management changes, and then you get someone new in charge, and they want to bring in their people. You know, they're comfortable working with the people that they've worked with. So our jobs obviously change. In my case, I've been really fortunate. I've gone through, I can't tell you how many executive producers at Fox, but I've been lucky to be able to, you know, keep my job.
You're good at what you do, too, Doug. Everybody
knows
that.
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons that this business is so transient, you know, because management changes and then they come in and people want to work, you know, with their own people. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but how do you take it? Now, you take it from a perspective that you listen to the camera and you listen to tape and you listen to audio or video, what have you, and you're the same way, Trout. And it kind of, I don't know, it just kind of throws me back sometimes that maybe management doesn't listen to you people because you guys listen to us and you've got, like, we'll make a suggestion. I'm not saying to do it. I'm not commanding it. Or I say it's imperative that you follow what I'm saying. My point is that I just want to see, want you guys to see something that maybe may help you understand, and maybe we'll have a different identity about yourself.
I think that I've been fortunate. I think most of the people that I've worked for do listen to. If I have a suggestion, or if I need a piece of equipment, or if I have something to make the show better, for the most part, they've been pretty receptive. I don't think I've been turned down that much. No, you got to be, you know, you can't, you know, scream and yell at every game that you need something. But when you pick your spots, I've been pretty fortunate that they've understood that covering the game is the most important thing, and covering it, you know, the best you can. So I think in that regard, I've been pretty lucky.
Okay. Trout?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, we've gotten to the point here in Denver where we've got like 14-man cameras on the home baseball show, a local telecast, because Root Sports and Ken Miller and the guys here, that's what they want. They want to watch baseball, so they want it covered as best they can get it covered, and they're supportive of that. Add another Exmo, you know, add another Robo. Yeah, you got to find a way to pay for it, though. Doug, you made that point early on in this hour. It doesn't come free, and if we want to make sure we've got all the lines covered in case there's a ball that bounces over, we got to have that camera, and they're totally willing to support it, but we can't just say, well, we're not doing anything for it. Yeah, if we have to put a sponsorship on it, we'll put a sponsorship on it, because that's what's going to get it paid for and get us the opportunity to have it.
Sure.
You got to pick your spots completely and hope that you play, hope that they'll listen to your suggestions from the production side like they do to give us the opportunity to have the cameras, but then also from how to present it. But some of that stuff's not going to get changed.
And part of the reason for that, Pete, is that the level, the bar is raised at every level. So if ESPN comes in and they're doing a certain level show, well, we have to keep up. Or not just ESPN, it could be anybody.
Right.
They got to keep up. We can't do a four-camera show and get away with it. Because the viewers now are more sophisticated. They know bad coverage when they see it. And it's not, you know, it's not acceptable.
But there's, I mean, for both of you guys being around for so long and seeing the changes of what's happened over the years, it's just like, yes, I agree 100% that the type of quality of video is by large superb. The type of coverage, I mean, it's lights out. You get it there in the blink of an eye. There's no doubt in my mind it's going to cost you money, and these trucks are worth over $10 million. I understand the money's got to come from somewhere, and they're paying out a nice hunk of change for every show. Granted. But I just feel like from times the quantitative of revenue that is being pulled down by the networks in a sense where I know they're very comfortable revenue-wise speaking, but it just leads me to believe that I just don't think that the – I don't know. It just hasn't felt like there's an identity. When we talked about this yesterday, Trout, that ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox is just like there's no real – change. I mean, it's all the same. It's like vanilla, you know? I mean, even though the quality's there, But instead of like the announced teams, is like, I don't know, I don't really tune in for the announcers anymore. I kind of tune myself out in a way. But
I'm sorry, what did you say, Pete? I wasn't listening.
Good one, Trout. But it's kind of it's leading to that in that area. I mean, Doug, you tell me. We got a little over a minute. You can tell me.
Well, I don't. I'm not sure. I agree. I think the coverage is great.
Yeah.
And whether you like announcers or not, that's subjective. And I think it's headed in the right direction.
Okay.
I think the coverage is going to get better. The quality is going to get better. Like Trout said, with 4K, if that's the answer. 3D didn't seem to be the answer. But we, you know, look where we've come. HD is unbelievable. Is 4K going to be better? Who knows what the future is, but, I think it keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. What do you think, Trout?
Yeah. And I think your concept of the identity is each regional network, each national network is going to try different things to try to make them stand out. The group that I'm working for now in LA, Time Warner Cable Sportsnet, the only reason I'm working for him is because Dougie had other things to do. It was his job before it came open for me.
That's right.
They've chosen to do all of the bells and whistle stuff from the studio where they think it can be done more controlled. So our job at the remote side is to do the best possible job we can of covering the game. And 3D telestration, all the different really high-end moving graphics, although we do a lot of it in the truck. The real high-end stuff that might distract from the game comes from the studio and is really great to look at. So
that's great.
I don't know. There's evolution all the time, I think, and you just got to hope that we can keep being part of it as long as we can.
That's great. Look, guys, we have to close the show. Thanks for being on, and I'll see you down the road. Dougie, take care. Trout,
thanks.
You do the same.
Thanks,
I'll
Steve.
Hook up.
Thanks for having me on.
You're on, my man. All right, Trout, thanks, you Steve. Do the same, my man. All right, my man. Take care. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Behind the Lens with Pete D'Alonzo, me, the host. And next week, I'm going to have Matt Vasgersian, the host of MLB Network. So he and I are going to chew the fat, so to speak. So I'll see you then. And thanks for listening. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Lens with Pete D'Alonzo. Be sure to catch the show again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. We'll have much more to talk about then.